The Joint Commission usually issues safety alerts occasionally, and in 2014 and then again in 2017, coinciding with this information, they reissued safety alert on noncompliance, finding that it was actually increasing instead of decreasing. So there's definitely a problem with that out there.
In the midst of constant commotion in the healthcare industry, one unified voice rises above the rest. A beacon bent on banishing biofilm. They are sterile processing professionals who clean and sterilize their way to improved outcomes, and their patient safety victories often go unseen. This is Beyond Clean, the central nexus for the people, processes, and products that are pushing the sterile processing industry forward. Join us every week as we give voice to that global force, fighting dirty all around the world. It's time to go beyond clean.
This week on Beyond Clean, we speak with Emily Smith, Clinical Marketing Specialist with Civco Medical Solutions. Emily holds a bachelor's degree in health sciences and has 25 years experience as a practicing sonographer and is board certified in OBGYN, abdominal, pediatric sonography, and vascular sonography. For the last 19 years of her professional career, she has had the privilege to educate radiology residents, physicians, and sonographers through active scanning and didactic platforms. She has been a member of the Society of Diagnostic Medical Sonographers for over 10 years and holds an elected position currently with the Society. Emily has done multiple national webinars and blogs on topics related to high-level disinfection and infection prevention and has been a presenter at several APIC chapter meetings.
And Mike, APIC, that's a great one because that's the Association for Infection Control. They were in Philly this year and I got a chance to go to the conference and met a lot of new people and actually had a chance to connect with a number of people from Civco at that event. And that's what led to Emily coming on the episode with us today to talk about Joint Commission preparation, one of the hottest topics that we typically have on Beyond Clean, but specifically related to high-level disinfection and ultrasound probes. And this may not always be an area that I guess our listeners might have a full level of comfort with, and I think that's what makes this interview today so important.
Yeah, and let me just say, I love working with infection prevention. You know, they are completely focused on what is best for the patient, and that's the exact people that you want to partner with. And when it comes more specifically to this topic, I mean, this is really critical because this is a blind spot for most SPD professionals, and there is a predominant thought in many sterile processing managers in particular that their expertise is only useful for one little sliver of the healthcare continuum. You know, it only matters for OR stuff, and that just simply isn't true. You know, there are multiple places and multiple ways where the expertise of sterile processing technicians and managers can expand into the facility as a whole. And so this is one of those areas where your expertise matters.
Yeah, it definitely matters, and you can be such a partner. What Emily is going to talk with us today is to give you some tools on how to not make that take up all of your time in terms of being that expert and really just focusing on increasing awareness and being a resource. Really excited to get into it.
HealthMark has intelligent solutions for your cleaning verification program, including products to measure water temperature, water quality, cleaning efficacy, and directly test for residual soil left on instruments. Find your tools for cleaning verification at hmark.com. There you will learn about our TOSI and SonoCheck that test the performance of mechanical washers as recommended in sterilization standards guidelines. Other products like CartWash Check test for mechanical efficiency and target temperature. The ProCheck 2 can detect residual protein to a very low level. Go to hmark.com today for all of your cleaning verification testing needs. 2023, and there's big news for IST. A closed warning letter, a new product launch, and a 10-year anniversary. OneTray IST has a lot to celebrate this year. OneTray's 2006 cleared 48-hour storage claim was acknowledged by the FDA, and the company is pushing forward, offering the total solution for reprocessing. OneTray maximizes reprocessing time. EasyTrax adds flexibility with instrument organization, and their upcoming product, OneCart, a sealed case cart with a smaller footprint and a perfect option for offsite sterilization, completes the total solution. Experience a year of efficiency with OneTray. For more information on the closure of the warning letter, visit OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. That's OneTray.com/FDA warning letter. Otherwise, you can reach out to the company by calling 937-619-0138 or visit OneTray.com/contact.
You're listening to Beyond Clean, the global voice of sterile processing.
Joining us now is Emily Smith, clinical marketing specialist with Civco Medical Solutions. And Emily, I know we talked several times before we had you come on as a guest, but I'm really excited for you to share the knowledge with our listeners today that you have in the world of not only high-level disinfection and ultrasound probes, but a really hot topic for all of our listeners in past episodes as well, specifically focusing on preparing for a Joint Commission survey.
Thank you so much, Justin. As you know, I listen to your podcast often, so when you asked me to be on here, I was very flattered to be a part of your platform.
We were flattered that you knew about our podcast, so we're even. So why don't we get the discussion going around ultrasound probes and reprocessing. And Mike and I have talked, I think even on previous episodes in general, but one thing that is a real fact in the industry today is that ultrasound probes are not limited to sterile processing. They're in clinic settings. They're managed by other departments, and sterile processing can be a source of knowledge and experience and sort of an expert perspective on how to reprocess them. But also, it's not necessarily the largest majority of devices coming through their department. So in many cases for frontline technicians, it can also be a source of anxiety. I think the challenges that we see in the industry can tie into a couple of those points. And I thought maybe you could just lay out for the listening audience, what are the challenges as you see them as an educator in this industry?
Yeah, that's a great comment there. Ultrasound is used in almost every department in healthcare right now. It's almost looked at as an extension of the clinical evaluation of patients. It's being used by nurses, sonographers, echocardiographers, physicians. It's everywhere. So you can see there's an issue in stabilizing the way high-level disinfection is done on these probes. Compliance is, in my opinion, the biggest challenge of reprocessing ultrasound probes out there because of this reason. In fact, one of the most common non-compliant standards as identified by the Joint Commission is a reduction of infections associated with medical equipment and devices. And actually, in 2017, 72% of hospitals seeking Joint Commission accreditation failed to meet the vital infection prevention and control standards. So that's three-fourths of hospitals out there that failed that, which is a pretty staggering number. The Joint Commission usually issues safety alerts occasionally, and in 2014 and then again in 2017, coinciding with this information, they reissued safety alert on noncompliance, finding that it was actually increasing instead of decreasing. There's definitely a problem with that out there.
Yeah, and I can tell you, I've lived this, and everything that you're saying, you know, is resonating. Because, you know, when I was an SPD manager, that was one of the things that fell under my realm of authority, was to go behind the radiology departments and kind of just check their processes, check their books to make sure that they were being compliant. And more often than not, what I found was that a lot of the things that we sort of take for granted in sterile processing, which is, you know, running tests, recording the results of those tests, those things that we do every day, multiple times a shift, and usually get right because, I mean, we do it all the time. That's not things that they are doing very frequently in these outside departments like radiology. And so it's something that has a lot of room for them to, you know, miss things. And so that was a very common error that I saw in radiology departments, for example, was that, you know, it would be little documentation errors. It would be things like missing to record the lot number on the test or missing to record the results of the test. You know, maybe they were in a hurry and they got the result and they just forgot to mark it properly. That happens a lot. And so I wanted to ask, what are some ways that SPD professionals can partner with their own institutions to help alleviate some of these challenges?
Well, first of all, you're totally right. The people in the departments, a lot of times, it's not actually an SPD professional who is reprocessing those probes. It is the nurse, the sonographer, the echocardiographer that's actually doing the exam for the majority of time. It's so critically important that they partner with their infection control department and the individuals performing the exam so that they collaborate and have a standardized practice. The department needs to be aware of the latest guidelines that the facility chooses to follow, and the SPD professionals are the greatest source in that. The education involved in training the employees and making sure everyone is competent in doing the reprocessing is very important. One of the greatest problems out there that the Joint Commission is seeing is actually the mistaken belief that the risk of passing infections to patients is actually low or non-existent. So I feel like if you don't know that there's a problem, it's hard to find the remedy for the problem if you're not even believing it exists.
Oh, absolutely. And that is a routine problem that we face in this particular industry quite often, is that there's this assumption that the risk of transmitting an infection is low, and that is just quite simply not the case. And you bring up a great point that, you know, this is a tremendous opportunity for sterile processing professionals, you know, particularly managers, to really establish themselves as subject matter experts within their facility, to really break out of the, you know, wherever they are, their little, you know, corner of the world, usually in the basement, to really break out of there and branch into other departments. Because what they will find is that if they have that confidence and they have that training to be a resource, their input is valuable in a number of areas. And so this is a great opportunity for sterile processing professionals to shine.
Oh, I would definitely agree with that. It's all a matter of trust and trusting that each step that you take in the disinfection process is moving toward patient safety.
So it's interesting because the first part of this conversation is about awareness, right? We want to make sure that everybody in all those departments has an awareness of what they're really working on. And once we have that awareness, now I'm thinking the SPD managers have proven themselves to be a resource because of the awareness, but now everybody's going to look at the manager and say, okay, that's great, but now how are we going to tackle this? And I can see how it would feel like a daunting task because of the sheer numbers of people and the spread out nature. So I'm assuming that there are resources out there that can support. And I thought maybe you could talk a little bit about where managers don't necessarily have to make this their new full-time job, but how they can rely on those resources that once they've done their job and increased awareness, and maybe they're answering a difficult question here or there, or even looking at the setup of a department and how to make them, you know, be set up for success. But what kind of resources are out there to really help them continue that conversation without it taking up their entire days?
Well, one big thing that they could do is to partner with a trusted ultrasound probe reprocessing company to find solutions that help your department maintain compliance. So first you find the guidelines that work with your workflow that don't impede on the workflow as much, but still you can stay compliant with those guidelines. Then if you find a partner for ultrasound reprocessing solutions, you can offer a reprocessing system that ensures a compliant and simple workflow. They could provide training and ongoing education to a department to keep staff and the leaders themselves trained on proper processes and the latest standards that are out there. So that's very helpful as well.
So the other thing we were just talking about is really just the whole understanding of the infection risk, right? So now let's tie it in to the manager is now going to the infection control department. Maybe it's a nurse, maybe it's an IPT professional, but they're going to engage them in helping tackle this sort of challenge and improve the processes for the institution. So why don't we give them what they need to partner with sterile processing to help make that improvement? And that is, what infection control standards and guidelines do those managers and our listeners need to be familiar with, not only for their own compliance, but then also when they're trying to get infection control to partner?
So there's multiple guidelines out there. And as far as the Joint Commission goes, for the most part, they don't really dictate what guidelines you go by. You choose your own guidelines. It's just that they want to see that you're following the guidelines to a T. The Center for Disease Control and Prevention has guidelines. ANSI and AMI, ANSI being the American National Standards Institute and AMI being the Advanced Safety in Medical Instrumentation. So they have some guidelines. The AIUM, which is the American Institute of Ultrasound in Medicine, updated their guidelines in March of 2018. AORN is the Association of Perioperative Registered Nurses. They have a set of guidelines, and there's several international guidelines out there as well.
Yeah, and of course, it's going to be up to the individual facility to develop their own policies and procedures after looking at those standards individually. And of course, that policy may even be just something as basic or as simple as saying, we are going to follow this particular standard. And so that's going to be what the Joint Commission in particular is going to hold a facility to, is whatever their policy says. And of course, you know, the assumption at the beginning is that you have a policy in place, because if they ask to see your policy and you say, well, we don't really have one, you know, that's an immediate citation right there. So this is something that has to be taken seriously. Now, when you're partnering with infection control, you know, one of the things that they're going to want to know is, you know, what are the consequences? What's the risk of failure here if we just don't pay any attention to this? And so that's what I wanted to ask you, is what are the consequences of not following these standards?
Oh, there's no doubt that noncompliance can have negative consequences for a facility. First and foremost, the reason we're all in healthcare is for the patient. And the biggest thing is it can place a patient at risk for contamination, if not multiple patients, if there was a potential outbreak that could occur. There's also the loss of Joint Commission accreditation, potential loss for Medicare and Medicaid status, and just general bad publicity. Word of mouth really travels, so you can lose business and damage the reputation of the facility. And worst case scenario would be potential litigation that could occur.
Yeah, and those numbers are rarely small when you're talking about both the publicity of these things getting out, and then, of course, the litigation that follows afterwards. Now, when we're talking about infection, what specifically are we talking about here? Like, what is the infection risk?
Oh, it can be I mean, if there's blood on the probe, it could be a potential for hepatitis B. It could be transmitted disease through a vaginal ultrasound or a transrectal ultrasound that we're talking about. So it's mucous membranes and blood products on these probes that can transmit these types of diseases.
Okay, so as we talk about Joint Commission and preparedness, a lot of that has to do with a review of policies and procedures and making sure that you're following those policies that you've established at your facility, obviously referencing industry recommended practices and guidelines. And you mentioned many of the organizations when you answered a previous question. So why don't we talk about what are some essential ingredients for those policies and procedures specifically related to high-level disinfection?
So again, as referred to before, the collaboration with infection control practitioners is crucial. Knowing industry and facilities guidelines and the steps to take to follow them, education and accountability for staff to perform the process. Today, things are so busy with the higher number of patients that go through departments that there's more pressure as far as time goes. But the time that it takes to reprocess a probe is very important. There's a certain amount of time that the probe needs to soak in chemicals. There's a certain amount of time that the rinse should be taking place. The temperature of the chemical needs to be at a certain temperature. And all these things need to be documented so that if the Joint Commission does come through on an audit, they're readily available. We just need to work with trusted partners to maintain a compliant process and train the staff in that process.
Excellent. So kind of the theme of what we're talking about is getting ready for surveys. And as we talked about a couple of times already, you know, there's plenty of places where facilities can get caught. So can you kind of just tell us what are some of the common survey findings that are related to probe reprocessing and just how can those be prevented?
Yeah, thanks, Mike. Definitely knowing the recommended guidelines is a big one. They'll ask you about the guidelines for your facility and the steps that are required for reprocessing ultrasound probes. Recently, as far as the infection prevention standpoint, they've been pretty hot on ultrasound gel as far as bacteria growth with an ultrasound gel and preventing that, especially with heated gels. As far as the high-level disinfection part, one thing that I've heard recurrently in the recent past is the transport recommendations of dirty and clean probes before and after the reprocessing takes place. And there's multiple guidelines that talk about transport. Some of them recommend AORN, for instance, recommends transporting your probe in a damp environment. And I know on your recent podcast, Peggy Spitzer from Denver talked a little bit about this and how important it is to get your probe to the reprocessing area as soon as possible and get it in the chemical. Because if blood products or gel adheres to the probe and dries, it harbors bacteria beneath it, and it's very difficult for the soaking process to get to that bacteria. So it's what makes the pre-cleaning part of the whole disinfection process so critically important.
Yeah, that whole biofilm concern, and it really forms very quickly when blood is allowed to dry on an instrument. You're 100% correct there. And transport also can be, if done inappropriately, and we've seen all kinds of creative ways that people have taken these probes from one area to another, and that can lend to unnecessary damages. Having spent some time in the repair industry myself, you definitely see that just in how they're handled for. And transport is one of the most vulnerable areas. So obviously a key point, not only to keep them sort of free of gross debris and to transport them quickly, but also to transport them safely.
It definitely. And also after the disinfection process has taken place, it's important because it's an area where cross-contamination can happen easily if the cord is not kept separate from the end of the transducer that was reprocessed. One other thing I wanted to point out too is to always refer back to your OEM or original equipment manufacturer's information for use, or what we refer to as an IFU, because you really want to make sure that the chemicals you're using on the probe are validated with that manufacturer, and it doesn't void the warranty on your probe. And as far as transport does go, the OEMs have a definite recommendation on how to transport, because they're looking to make sure that the probe doesn't get damaged. So the lens of the probe, especially in transesophageal echo probes, is very delicate. And the more you're moving the probe around, the easier it is to damage that lens. So they try and recommend ways of transporting that keep the probe itself safe.
Yeah, and even for reprocessing of TEE probes, and we've echoed this on several episodes, but leak testing is about electricity escaping and potentially burning a patient versus what you would see with a standard like gastroscope or colonoscope, where you're just trying to make sure that there's no hole and you're doing it by pumping air into the scope or leak testing that way. And that's a cross-contamination concern on the flexible scope. It's also a cross-contamination issue with a TEE probe, but more importantly, it's a burn concern, correct?
Definitely. It can actually shock the patient. And I don't know if about you, but my dad has a pacemaker, and I don't really want him to be shocked with that pacemaker actively running either.
And out of curiosity, and I'm not sure how much this relates to the sterile processing world, but having been a registered nurse myself and worked on the clinical side in other departments, you had mentioned the ultrasound gel and that could be a source of cross-contamination. Can you just explain that a little bit, like what might happen there and how you prevent that? Because that just sparked my curiosity.
So ultrasound gel, especially when it's warmed, can be a source of bacteria growth. There's an antimicrobial within ultrasound gel that when heated becomes inactive. And when it's a hot, moist environment, it's the perfect environment for bacteria to grow. So I know a lot of times when I'm doing ultrasound, you're doing it occasionally for a liver transplant postoperatively or a kidney transplant postoperatively where there's incisions and stuff. You don't want to get that bacteria-filled gel into the incision that you're scanning over.
And then one other thing that, you know, as we're talking about all the various ways and traps that you can get, you know, cited on non-compliance for probe reprocessing, like Justin said, you know, you need to be doing a leak test, but it's also really critical that you be documenting that you're doing this leak test, because documentation is one of those things that falls through the cracks very frequently. And what's interesting about particularly T probes is that it's actually mandated by the FDA that those receive leak testing and it's documented, because as anybody who's been through a Joint Commission survey will tell you, if it's not documented, it didn't happen.
Definitely. And the documentation is one area, too, that's so important. As we talked earlier about the different things that are cited, documentation was one of the big things that is cited out there with the Joint Commission. I mean, you need to be documenting, as you referred to earlier, the date, the lot number, the MRC test, or how effective the chemical is. That needs to be documented. The amount of time that it sat in the chemical needs to be documented. The temperature of the chemical, because it needs to be to a certain temperature to actually be effective enough to clean the probe. It needs to be rinsed for a certain number of minutes, and that needs to be documented. The person doing the reprocessing, we need to know that. We need to know the patient ID in some form and the probe, because if there were to be an outbreak that took place, it's very important to be able to track that back to the patient to be able to treat them appropriately afterwards.
All right, Emily, this, as it always seems to go, went very quickly, but The information was excellent, and I think that we've really armed our frontline technicians with what they need to know about reprocessing, but I think we've also given managers a lot of information and some tools that they can take forward to really support all the different departments that are using probes of all kinds throughout the institution. And so I just wanted to thank you for coming on and sharing all of your good knowledge with the listeners today.
Oh, thank you so much for having me. I really appreciate it.
That was Emily Smith, Clinical Marketing Specialist with CIVCO Medical Solutions. And Mike, we've had, at least one previous episode that was generally around ultrasound probes. We've had several on Joint Commission surveys and preparing for those. But this really combined two topics that I think were really critical. We talked about transport. We talked about infection control, but a number of key takeaways. And the biggest takeaway is empowering sterile processing managers to become an expert for their facility in this area.
Absolutely. So if you're looking for a way to, you know, dig your way out of being just the expert in the basement to being genuinely a resource for the entire facility, you know, this is one of those key areas where you can do it. Go to whoever is in charge of radiology and say, you know, hey, are you aware that a lot of facilities are getting cited for issues regarding probe reprocessing? Do you mind if I, you know, take a look at your process, take a look at your documents just to make sure everything's in order? This is the type of information that you really can use to advance yourself and the quality of care for patients throughout your organization.
All right. Well, that's going to do it for this week's show. As a reminder, you can help support us by subscribing to Beyond Clean on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and Spotify, or your favorite podcast application. Simply search for Beyond Clean Podcast. We'd appreciate a rating and a review because your feedback is important to the show. And if you have any topics that you'd like us to cover on a future episode, just send an email to info@beyondclean.net. On behalf of Mike and myself, thank you for listening to another edition of Beyond Clean.